morning, everyone. I'm going to ask Peter Dunn, who is the president and CEO of the Community Foundation, to come up and introduce our speakers.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you. From the time I moved here about 9 years ago, I've always remarked to myself about how many civically obsessed people there are in Syracuse. And today's topic is certainly in line with that, and I know many people in this room share that civic obsession. What you may not know around this topic is that the Central New York Community Foundation, along with the Gifford Foundation, the Allen Foundation, and the Reisman and Snow Foundations, all collectively pitched in together to fund the civic engagement and outreach piece of the Consensus Project. And I think as we saw over the last several months, there was robust conversation that happened across the community around the topic of government modernization. We couldn't be more pleased with that work and that engagement, and we certainly thought it was both productive and great for the community on multiple levels. You didn't come here to hear me, and so I'm going to get out of the way by introducing three members of the commission and its project. First, Neil Murphy, who is recently retired as the president of SUNY ESF. Kathy Murphy, Pietrafeza, a all-around force of nature and chair of Syracuse 2020, who's been the driving force around a lot of this work, and Rob Simpson, the president and CEO of Center State CEO. Please join me in welcoming them today.
Good morning. It's great to have so many people out on a bright morning. Even though it's cold, we're moving in the right direction. So what we're going to do this morning is we're going to talk to you a little bit about the journey we've been on. We're going to talk to you a little bit about the content of the finalized report that was released in February. And then we're going to talk to you a little bit about what are some of the next steps. So with that, the overriding goals for Consensus are on this slide. And it's really important to remember the focus on better governance. How can we deliver services of a higher quality, hopefully at a lower cost? Economic growth. We need to have the ability to stimulate economic growth. And last, responsive and inclusive representation. Extremely important. Now, this is the Consensus timeline. This is what we've been on. You may have realized that we issued a baseline report in 2015. The preliminary options were issued in a draft report in February of last year. In February of this year, a final report to the community. I have to tell you, it is shocking to me that we've been on this journey for in excess of three and a half years. But we're finally at a point that we can share with you some very important information. The one big thing as we looked at our community is basically our community is an integrated community. There are roughly 69% or 69 every 100 out of every 100 people that live in one political district and work in another. And that shows that we are inherently linked, everybody in our community. Now, this is sort of what is the baseline? We have, as you can see on the left, all the various jurisdictions that we have. It's a very complex government we have in the county. We're spending $1.7 billion a year in round numbers. And when we look at the issue of special districts, a thing of passion to me, 140 water districts in Onondaga County, amazing. Now, what are our challenges? Clearly, as a greater community, we have some very, very strong challenges. You look at 24,500 less employed residents today than in 1990. That's a big deal. If you look at in terms of demographics, we're down 1% in population. And you look at our performance. You know, our performance in terms of economic growth, we're at about one quarter of the national rate. We're not doing the job that we should be doing. And lastly, concentrated poverty, first in the nation among poverty among underrepresented groups. Now, literally, we're on borrowed time because there are a lot of fiscal headwinds that all units of government are facing. If you look at the financial pressures on the city of Syracuse alone, basically the city that in the current fiscal year has had to, in essence, borrow or draw $12.1 million to meet the needs. If you look at the fund balance, the fund balance has dropped by that amount. You look at the current burn rate, and we could be in difficulty in the city by the year 2020. Not that we're not in difficulty in the current year. And then to change the trajectory, the only thing that we have available to us is increase the taxes, cut services, or have some dramatic increase in state aid. But the issue is we have to grab hold of this ourselves. We have to take care of our own destiny. Now, if we think other entities within the county have some other fiscal issues, we're wrong. The fiscal winds extend basically to all of our towns. You can see the dotted line, which is the progression of expenditures, and you can see the dashed red line, which is basically the revenue. In fact, our villages are in a little bit more difficult shape even than our towns. So this isn't an issue that's just the city. It extends to all of us in Onondaga County. We have concluded that we can do better, and even more importantly, we must do better. So in 2016, our first draft, what did that say? These are preliminary recommendations. And after the issuance of those recommendations, as Peter said, we had a robust engagement in education and outreach to the community. We had some 80 meetings. We touched, I think this is a small number, 4,000. As far as I remember, the number probably was more like 5,000. News coverage and outreach, online comments, robust response relative to the website. And what did people say as a result of that draft report? They said the focus was heavily on recommendation 51, which deals with a new metropolitan government. Not as much discussion about the other 50 recommendations. Basically, people said, what about our schools? And as you may remember, our response to that is we need another commission to address the school issues. Universal desire, we need to have that economic growth. Universal distrust of Albany, that was very, very strong in the response to almost everyone. Protect the representation and the access of our citizens to their political leaders. Protect and find ways to reduce the tax burden. Realization that tax burden is too high. Don't compromise our services. And please understand and tell us what's worked locally. And lastly, we need more detail. We need some models for the future. So in 2017, we developed basically a report of the Commission on Government Modernization that talked about data. We engaged the experts. And we developed and focused on what the priorities were for the citizens that had engaged in the process in the draft report. And basically, we have a report of 110 pages. There are now 50 recommendations because one recommendation was actually implemented. We covered five functional areas, the most important functional areas of government. And each section includes an overview. It presents recommendations. It develops the rationale for the recommendation, anticipates impacts, including financial impacts, and basically it identifies who would have the responsibility to carry this recommendation forward. Let's take the first one, which is basically on infrastructure. And just isolating one recommendation of all the recommendations on infrastructure, form a core highway services area. And this is looking at basically the repair of our transportation infrastructure and maintenance from a core set of assets. Those of you who may have woken up in the morning with a beep, 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 which represents a snowplow or a sander or a de-icer that hits the boundary of another municipal district, that's called dead-ending. Shouldn't it make sense for that vehicle to continue on and continue that loop in something that really makes sense? So what this core highway services area would coordinate both the planning and the operations basically for our highway system. The increased scale should reduce the unit cost of both maintaining our highways and all the planning for the future. And we estimate it would save $2 to $3 million a year. In the area of public safety, one of the recommendations is to consolidate the police and sheriff's departments. One of the things that we see there is, for example, reducing the administrative cost, getting, frankly, more officers on the streets, and more resources that would be available to deploy new technology. And in the process, we're projecting a saving of $3.4 to $5.8 million a year. In the area of public safety, one of the things that we have, in municipal operations, of a number of things we've taken a look at, we're recommending that the village justice courts be merged basically with the town courts. People think that the court system in our villages actually create revenue. They don't. They're a cost to our villages. And in the process, we estimate that we would save some $200,000 a year. In the case of economic development, one of the recommendations is to develop a municipal development fund. What does that mean? It means, can we, through sharing of tax revenue because of a new economic activity, can we actually get more cooperation and moving forward to looking to how we can improve the general economy in the county as a whole, and to actually get individual municipal units working together? And by this, basically, if there's a sharing, 60% would stay with the political unit jurisdiction in which there was the economic growth, 40% would go into a pot that would share with others. Get us working together to create new economic growth. And then where there's a strong focus, again, is an area of governance. And in this new report, our recommendation number 50 deals with that municipal government. And Rob is going to share with you this and other aspects of going forward. Rob?
So good morning, and thank you all for coming out. It's great to have an opportunity to talk with a lot of friends and colleagues from around the community about these important issues. And maybe most importantly, thank you to Neil and to Kathy and the other members of the commission who spent literally thousands of hours over 3.5 years at researching these issues and thinking through them and deliberating them and having an open, honest discussion with thousands of community residents about our future. And I think that that's really a big piece about what this discussion is about. It's about what we want the future of our community to look like, how we want to get there. You know, it's interesting to me, the discussion since the release of the final report has been at times pretty heated. I think that that's okay. There isn't a member of the commission that didn't realize that we were stepping into a conversation that was fraught with peril, but also ripe with opportunity. And I think that forums like this are great because they allow those of us who've been involved in the work of the commission and those who haven't, those who have opinions in support and those who have opinions in opposition, to come and sit around the same table over a cup of coffee or whatnot and actually talk to each other as opposed to firing off missives on the front page of the newspaper. And I say that somewhat cavalierly, but you know, what Neil just mentioned to me resonates. There was an article, or an opinion piece, I should say, clearly very well researched by a faculty member at Cornell University, and it came out about a week after the consensus report came out, and it criticized, roundly criticized consensus for not having done their homework and not having looked at best practice models, and then literally held up a model that they pointed to as the best model in the country for helping to improve land use decisions and generate collaboration and regional thinking from Minneapolis-St. Paul that was implemented in 1970 for regional tax-based sharing. And the last slide that we just put up here was based on that very model referenced in the report on a certain page. It's clear, it's there in black and white as something that has been recommended. So there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I think we appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, to answer questions, and also to help you understand the reasons why we've made some of the decisions and the recommendations that we've made in this report. And I think the most difficult component of the governance conversation has been that there is no perfect solution. There is no perfect model for governing a community. There, in every decision you make about governance, and we'll walk through a number of them, there are trade-offs. There are trade-offs that you have to measure against a series of values. We've tried hard in this process to listen to the values that the community has expressed to us, all told more than 11,000 comments over the 3.5 years we've been working on this, and to distill those into the things that we think people were telling us were the most important, and to use those values as a guidepost when we've made recommendations about district size, about representation, about access to your local government officials, and other critical decisions. So first and foremost, I want to be very clear about something. The recommendations of the Consensus Commission are not to have the city swallow the county, nor are they to have the county take over the city. That is factually not correct. The recommendation from Consensus is the creation of a brand new metropolitan form of government, a brand new government. The recommendations do not include dissolving the city of Syracuse. That is also not true. Not in the report, not something that we would recommend, and there are a lot of reasons why we wouldn't recommend that. They also don't recommend dissolving the county or any other town and village at this point. Furthermore, the recommendations are that we have, that every municipality within Onondaga County, city, county, town, and village, be given the same opportunity to join a new metropolitan government. There is no recommendation in the consensus report that focuses on only city, county. There is no desire to only have a metropolitan government that reflects only the current city and county legislature. In fact, it is very clear in the consensus report that any one municipality that wanted to join the metropolitan government would need to do so by opting in. Their voters would have to self-select into this metropolitan form of government. If their voters, whether it's in the city, a town, or a village, didn't choose to opt into that, then they would certainly, then they would never be able to be forced into that. So there's no effort to force anyone together. There is a recommendation, however, that at a minimum, as we try to put together this new form of government, that we start with our two largest municipal entities. And all told, the city and county represent somewhere on the order of 87% of total local government spending in Onondaga County. Without the participation of the city and the county governments, metropolitan government doesn't have a lot of legs, doesn't have a lot of traction, doesn't have a lot of scale. But that is certainly not to say that efforts to modernize and streamline should stop there, because they shouldn't. In fact, we think that, as Neil mentioned before, the fiscal pressures in the towns and the villages, very similar to the city, will bring these communities to the table over the course of the next 2, 3, 5 years, such that many municipalities in Onondaga County, we believe, would ultimately see the benefits in opting into, metro government. A great example is Indianapolis. What they did going back 30 years, over that 30-year period of time, 73 of the 74 municipalities that made up that that geography have ultimately opted in. Now, it's taken, in some cases, decades, but many of them have opted in over time to what is now a very robust metropolitan government. Want to be very clear, 11,000 comments, a tremendous amount of feedback, public meetings, private meetings, online forums, phone calls, emails, text messages. We one of the reasons why the report has taken as long as it has, and we've gotten some criticism for that, is that the commission worked really hard to catalog those 11,000 comments, to distill them, to find the points of commonality and disagreement between them, and to try to identify the things that were the most common themes. And what we heard in that in those feedback sessions were access is really important. People don't want to feel like they're losing access to their local government representative. And in some cases, people feel as if the farther away their representative is, the less their voice is heard, which is not surprising given what we find in terms of feedback about public opinion for president, for Congress, right, for governor, for state senator, for state assemblyman. The smaller the districts, the more people feel as if they have a voice and that they are heard. And that is something that we try to take very seriously. Certainly the responsiveness of local government being critical. People do not want to lose services. I think that's really important because we're in a situation right now in our community where we are currently losing services, right? The decisions that our local government officials are making are causing a reduction in the services that people in our community value. And those are being driven primarily by fiscal pressures. An inclusive community, we heard this loud and clear, that having a governance structure that represents the full spectrum of our community is important. And we'll talk a little bit about that. And as I mentioned, services. We looked at dozens upon dozens of different models of how you might go about thinking about creating a metropolitan government. And there are, as I mentioned, there's no perfect solution. We looked primarily at Nashville, at Indianapolis, at Louisville, at Jacksonville, Princeton in New Jersey. There are a handful of places in the United States that have gone about and done this. They've all done it a little bit differently. They have all shared with us stories about things that they did that they thought worked well and things that they did that they might do differently had they had to do it all over again. But we spent the better part of 6 months really wrestling with this issue of governance because we knew that no matter how many great service level recommendations we put out, that the focus of attention for the community would be on the governance conversation as it was the first with the first report. We boiled those dozens of different models down to six, and we spent a lot of time evaluating these six opportunities, these six models for a metropolitan legislature based on the values that we had identified in the public comment discussion. And ultimately, we settled on the fifth model for a number of different reasons, and we can talk a little bit about the values trade-offs here that are inherent. But ultimately, it's a 33-member legislature that's recommended. With 29 district seats, 4 at-large seats, 5 seats that are entirely contained within the city, 15 seats that are entirely contained within what are currently now suburban communities, and then 9 hybrid districts that straddle city and county that the Consensus Commission recommends would have a majority, 50.01% majority city residents and city voters in those districts. There are a lot of reasons, and I'm happy to answer questions about that. But one of the more important things that was accomplished here is actually driving down the constituent ratio, and we'll talk about that in a minute. We've heard a ton about representation. I've seen more letters and comments on Syracuse.com that have spoken to representation. And so I want to share some pretty important facts with us about the current nature of representation in our community. Onondaga County voter enrollment, 37% Democrat, 29% Republican, 26% unaffiliated, other parties 8. We have a county legislature with 13 Republicans, 4 Democrats, 0 unaffiliated, 0 other party. Is that a representative legislative body? Given the voter representation that we have in Onondaga County? No. Absolutely not. City, Syracuse voter enrollment. Democrats 55, Republicans 15, unaffiliated 23, other parties 7. Our common council, right now, 9-1. Historically, we don't have to go back too far, 10-0. Is that representative of the people who live in our community? Of course not. Our current legislative bodies are not representing our community at large. And I do not mean that to be a criticism of the political parties. It is not intended to be. But we cannot wrestle with issues of governance and representation without having an honest dialogue about the fact that what we're doing today is intentionally excluding certain voices from the decision making. And it should not be a surprise to us as a community that when we have governing bodies that are highly partisan, that we end up with highly partisan decision making. And that one of the ways that we are going to improve the outcomes that we get as a community is going to be to change the way that we structure our governing bodies and that we bring in more voices with different opinions into our community. It's not lost on me that those other parties or non-enrolled voters represent almost 25 to 26% of both our city and our county, but yet none of those quote-unquote independent voices are represented on either one of our legislative bodies, and that's a challenge. We've also heard a lot about minority representation, and this is an incredibly challenging issue to discuss, but it's important that we do. Here you see a slide, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, and Nashville. You probably can't read the key on the bottom, but the far left-hand side of the bar chart shows the representation, African-American share of seats by percentage, pre-Metro, with Metro government, after 4 years, after 8 years, and current. And what you see in these three models is a progressive increase in the percentage of African-Americans who are represented on the legislature, the governing body of those communities, post-Metro. It is impossible for me to tell whether or not that is a direct correlation, a direct product of Metro or not. What we do know is that in these three cases, there actually has been improvement. What we also know is that our current representation of minorities in both the legislative bodies of the city and the county is not adequate. In the city of Syracuse, we have 46% of our community that is a registered minority or underrepresented class. Voting power on the city council is 20%, 30% if you include the president of the common council. So our current governing body in the city of Syracuse is not adequately representing the minority community. In the county legislature, the problem is even worse. In the county legislature, we have 17 members. We have two minority members on the county legislature. And that is less than the total minority representation for Onondaga County. And again, no Latinos. How is that possible? So the point there being, what we're doing now isn't working. We believe that a different model can improve the outcomes that we have for the minority community and can improve representation. We want to build a model that will improve representation. Go back to the three values that Neil talked about at the very beginning, economic growth, better governance, more inclusion. And we think that some of the choices that we've made in the breakdown of representation in this new model actually increase the likelihood of minorities getting elected, particularly to district seats in the new legislature. This slide is really important, and I think it speaks a lot to the thought process of the 19 members of the Consensus Commission as we went through this process. We just spent some time talking about the fact that neither the city nor the county is fully representative of the voters and the breakdown of our community. We also spent some time talking about the fact that they are both from a partisan standpoint, far more heavily weighted to one side of the aisle than the other, than their populations are. And one of the challenges that we have as a result, we have a lot of challenges in this community, but one of the challenges that we have as a result is that our decision-making around critical issues for the future of our community, and when I say community, I don't mean city, I don't mean town, I don't mean village, I don't mean county, I mean our community, all of us that live in this place within 20 minutes of each other or 30 minutes of each other, we don't make smart, balanced decisions. We tend to make highly politicized, highly ideological decisions in many cases coming from different directions. We've tried hard to build a model that would better align and balance the representation in our community and the interests of our community. Because frankly, our city depends on our suburbs. Our suburbs depend on our city. Rural parts of our community are necessary for our city and our suburbs. And the idea that this is or should be an us versus them conversation is antithetical to every member of the Consensus Commission, whether they represent a town, a village, a city constituency, a neighborhood constituency. We do not believe, in fact, we reject the premise that this should be an us versus them conversation. It absolutely cannot be an us versus them conversation, or else we will continue to repeat the cycles that we have had over the course of the last many years. District constituent ratios, we talked about this a little bit. Currently, in that first slide is actually the city of Syracuse, about 28,000, Onondaga County, 27,000. What we are talking about doing with a legislature with 29 district seats is actually driving down the constituent ratio for our citizens here in Onondaga County and throughout what we would consider to be the new, call it, you know, Greater Syracuse Metropolitan Government. Significantly driving down. This would be a dramatic improvement in the access that people would have to their individual representative. This is one of the things that we heard loud and clear in the discussion from the community. They did not want to lose the ability for them to know their legislator, to be able to access their legislator, to be able to know that their legislator understands the issues of their neighborhood, of their community, of their town, of their village. So driving down the constituent ratio was a critical part of the decision-making process. So real impact. There have been some who've criticized the consensus effort as being nothing more than an effort to save money. And I just want to be very clear about something. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, we believe that a lot of the things that are inherent in those 49 recommendations, as well as the better model for decision-making, right? Real, regional, thoughtful, balanced decision-making in the metropolitan model actually lead to better outcomes and better services and a better future for our community. And there's this great list. Fortunately, we're not starting from scratch. There are a lot of our local leaders at the city, county, town, village level who've made a lot of really smart decisions to improve local government over the years. And we're in one of them, right, with the zoo. But when we have made these thoughtful investments in modernizing and streamlining government services, things have generally gotten better as opposed to getting worse. They've saved money, and they provided better service. And 9/11 Center is a fantastic example of that. So we believe that there are tons of opportunity for us to not only improve and drive down the cost of government, but actually deliver services better and more efficiently to people in the community. It's spring. I don't really want to talk about snowplows. Plenty of people talk about snowplows. There's obvious. I mean, you can't look at the system of snowplowing across Onondaga County and all the levels of DPW without realizing it's completely and totally inefficient. And I know Neil talked about the core highway services area. There's great opportunities here. There have been some I've heard and who have written letters to the editor who have made comments about the fact that this all sounds great, but there's no real savings to be had. And I will point those individuals to a number of examples of where real savings have been found in relatively small consolidations. And the Clay Police Department and the Sheriff is a great example. Over 7 years, that project has saved $12 million in 7 years. $12 million, that's one town police department, one service category in the entire county, $12 million in savings, and not a single job lost. Not one municipal job lost. Every single one of those officers in the town of the Clay had the opportunity to go and work for the Sheriff's Department. So what does all this mean? You have the service level recommendations. We have the possibility of savings through consolidation of local governments, starting perhaps with the city and county, but ultimately, hopefully, including other towns and villages. We believe a $33 million savings is actually a conservative number. I want to be clear that one of the values that the Consensus Commission adopted is we did not feel as if it was our place to go line by line through the personnel departments of individual towns and villages and identify whose jobs should be eliminated in any circumstance. That was not the goal of the Consensus Commission. And in fact, we've done everything in our power to minimize the disruption to municipal workforce. So that $33 million savings number, we believe, is conservative. Some have said that's 1.4% of the total local government spending, $1.7 billion. See, I told you this was a worthless effort. Let's take a step back and let's be honest with ourselves. The total city property tax levy is $34 million. We're talking about a $33 million savings if we were to embrace these recommendations. 100% of the city property tax levy. It's actually now, I think, 138 at the county side in terms of the county property tax levy. This savings is a huge percentage on what is currently the 14th highest property tax burden in the United States of America right here in Syracuse and Onondaga County. You want to talk real leverage, though? For 40 years, for the 14 years I've been back in Syracuse, I've heard every single elected official, state elected official, town, village, planning board, zoning board, county executive, mayor, talk about unfunded mandates. And despite the broad coalition of opposition around unfunded mandates, we have managed to make very little progress on the issues of unfunded mandates. Recently, the state took a share of the increase in Medicaid burden, which means that the county share is not going to continue to grow as rapidly as it was. But those are relatively small savings. Assemblyman Al Sturpee has worked very closely with the Consensus Commission and introduced a piece of legislation recently that would tie a successful referendum on metropolitan government in Onondaga County to the state relieving 100% of the Medicaid burden. And to give you a sense for that, that is $98 million a year that costs Onondaga County. I think I saw something in the newspaper, it might be up $106 million at this point. It's a big number, it's about $100 million. Add that into the opportunity to generate $33 million in savings. Look at the potential impact. And if nothing else, we can disagree about certain elements of governance. We can disagree about which service areas might be the ones and the most appropriate to go first. But we should not disagree in any way, shape, or form that what the Consensus Commission has done is teed up a phenomenal and potentially transformative opportunity to try to drive down some of the highest property taxes in our community, to try to dramatically reduce them, and at the same time to improve the way we're governing, to get us thinking more regionally, and to improve the services that we're having access to. If we could pull this off, $1.3 billion over 10 years. Now, what could we as a community do with $1.3 billion over 10 years? I read the article like all of you over the weekend. We're going in one fiscal year from $5.5 million in spending to fix roads and potholes in the city of Syracuse to spending two. And the impact is going to be dramatic. What could we do with $1.3 billion? What could business owners do with $1.3 billion to put people back to work? What could residents do with $1.3 billion to feed their families, to improve themselves, to fix their homes? The impact from something like this could be dramatic. And to me, that impact alone is worth having a truly open and honest and ongoing community dialogue about the fact that what we're doing now isn't working, that there is a way to do better, and that we have to do better or things are going to get worse. So, what's next? We believe there are some recommendations that would require a referendum, not the least of which obviously being metropolitan government. There are 41 recommendations that we hope that our local legislators, town and village officials will grab immediately and start implementing. And already with the metropolitan, with MWB and Aqua, there's been one that's been checked off the list. And there are a couple that we're still trying to figure out whether or not they need referendum or not. So now the ball's in your court. Consensus Commission, 19 members have spent 3.5 years of time and energy doing this work. Presenting these recommendations to the community, presenting them in a way, frankly, that was unanimous after a tremendous amount of hard work. And the one thing I can tell you, I think with pretty clear certainty, knowing those people the way I've gotten to know them over the last 3.5 years, is they're not going to stop talking about this, despite some of the pushback and the furor and the very harsh public rhetoric that is, frankly, in my opinion, designed to stop conversation before it starts. that group of people, smart leaders as they are, aren't going to stop because the alternative, the status quo, is not working for our community. And we've seen headlines within the last week, 100 out of 100 in economic performance, the worst concentrated poverty in America of any city, right, for our minority communities. What we're doing isn't working. We can do better. It requires hard choices. But if we don't make those hard choices, someone else is going to make them for us. I'll stop there.
I have a question about the Medicaid mandate relief. It feels to me like this is a shell game, because if in fact we're going to reduce property taxes to achieve the benefit of Medicaid mandate relief, it seems disingenuous not to suggest that somewhere the funding to serve the elderly, our older citizens who are nursing homes and so forth, and our poor people has got to come from someplace. So the burden of taxes is going to shift to the state level, and guess what? We're all state residents. So I'm not saying that this shouldn't be the way we should pursue things, but it doesn't seem to be accurate to suggest that somehow this responsibility is going to be taken away from us as citizens.
I think that's absolutely fair. I would certainly push back on the characterization of it being a shell game. I think from a purely economic standpoint, we can be very honest with ourselves that the vast majority of income taxes that would go to pick up the cost of an increase of the state burden of Medicaid would not come from residents in Onondaga County. It wouldn't. And I'm not here trying to make good state policy, right? I'm here advocating for Onondaga County and for Central New York. And the reality is the shift in that burden to call it an income tax model, if that's the way the state would have to pay for it, would disproportionately benefit our residents in Onondaga County. And I am not going to make any apologies for that in any way, shape, or form. There has been effort for 40 years to change the Medicaid burden. And NICOM and NISAC and all these groups and Mobilize and Unshackle Upstate New York and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I will just tell you, I think we've made more traction over the course of the last couple of weeks on an honest conversation about the Medicaid burden in New York State and the local share of that as a result of this conversation and the Assemblyman Sturpee's bill than most of those groups have managed to get in 40 years. And that is because we are not going to the state with our hand out and saying we need something from you. We are going to the state admitting that what we've been doing is also part of the problem, right? What we've been doing is also part of the problem. It's not the only problem, but New York State and their spending patterns are not the only problem also. We're coming with our flaws in hand, with a strategy to improve them, and we're simply asking the state to look in the mirror and to make some changes themselves. And, you know, when you're trying to have an honest conversation designed to actually get something done, that's a far more effective way than screaming from the rooftop and pointing a finger at somebody and saying, you know, you're the problem. We're all part of the problem.
Yeah, I was just curious regarding the I like all the ideas about consolidating services, but as far as consolidating the government, not to further the partisan divide, but if at the county level, Democrats are outnumbered more than 2-1, and at the city level, they're a 9-1 majority, I'm just very concerned as a Democrat that by combining to 19 representatives for the whole county, the urban voice, the minority voice, and the Democratic voice would be completely extinguished by a county government. I mean, I didn't see the correlation between the numbers of minorities represented in government and how that would be improved by a merged government.
A great question. And so we'll talk a little bit about it. I want to be clear that the government models aren't a guarantee for an outcome, but we believe that the model that we presented offers a better opportunity. First and most importantly, the recommendation from consensus is that the new metropolitan government legislature be that the districts be drawn independently. That is not currently the case. Listen, there is a reason why 13 out of 17 county legislative seats are Republican in a county where 39% of voters and only, 29% of voters, You know where I'm going. 37%, 39% are Democrats, and 28% are Republicans. There's a reason, because the lines are drawn in ways to perpetuate political outcomes. And I don't, again, I am not sitting here to make a partisan statement on that. The same is true in the city that also has an overly partisan legislature. The challenge that we have, however, is that we ought to be doing that in ways that actually reflect the constituency in our communities. And doing that independently is more likely to result in an appropriate balance that is more representative and reflective of the community. Specifically to the issue of minority representation, by driving the size of districts down, especially because of the very significant problems we have with segregation, economic and racial segregation in our community, we are increasing the likelihood that minorities who tend to live in closer proximity to each other are more likely to be elected to represent those districts, particularly in the city, but also potentially in those nine hybrid districts that are more than 50% city residents. Is it a perfect solution? I can't sit here and tell you that it is. Is the Consensus Commission interested in hearing from stakeholders about how that might be done in a way that is better? Absolutely. But we believe that, on balance, independent districting and smaller districts are likely to lead to better and more representative outcomes.
Hey, Rob.
Hi.
First of all, I want to say this is commendable. I mean, I know it's been a lot of work, and I certainly don't pretend to know all the answers. But what I do recognize is that, first of all, much of this could be done without any government merger whatsoever. You have the right people at the table. You go back and you talk about how these recommendations, many of which you all admit, need no referendum. We could move forward.
Yep.
So I think that's good to know, that we could make progress. We obviously need to do something different. But what I'm concerned about is that if we continue to go back to this argument of focusing on poverty, focusing on segregation, focusing on those who have less, jobs, industry, why didn't we include the school system? That is where all of those issues get resolved, and that is where we expend most of our taxes, most of our funding. So I'm concerned that we came up with a plan that discusses these issues as if we're really going to focus and resolve them, but yet we didn't focus on the very area that I think answers a lot of these issues when we're talking years to come.
It's a great question. It is the question we get the most frequently. I want to be very straightforward and upfront with people. The Consensus Commission was not created to solve poverty in the community. That's not why it was established. That does not mean that it hasn't been a critically important piece of the conversation every step of the way. And we've tried to make decisions in here that recognize the fact that we have the highest concentration of poverty among our minority community in America that would make those things better. The schools, a couple of different things. One, I do not believe that we would have gotten this conversation started, had we led with the schools. And I go back to when Kathy and I were working on trying to get the unanimous support of the county legislature and the city council and the mayor and the county executive to undertake this work. And we got darn close. We got about closer than just about any other piece of policy in the state, in the history of Onondaga County and the city of Syracuse. We got every single member of the county legislators sign on to the resolution that said, yep, we believe in the charter of this work, go forward. And we got 8 out of the 9 voting members of the city council. And there's one that we didn't. And the one that we didn't was Helen Hudson. And the reason Helen Hudson wouldn't sign on to the resolution of support is that we didn't specifically enumerate the schools as an issue that we ought to be talking about and focusing on this effort. And had we written the schools in, we wouldn't have gotten the resolution through the county legislature. We wouldn't even have gotten the conversation started. Now, all that said, at the very first meeting of the commission, we spent 4 hours talking specifically about schools. And there were a couple things at play, one which is, we didn't have the right people around the table with the expertise in education to have that meaningful conversation around schools. Two, we did this work over 3.5 years with one $250,000 earmark. And I can tell you that that the amount of time and energy and effort and direct cash that's gone into working on this has been north of $1 million. we didn't have the resources to do the same analysis on the schools, and I wish we'd had. And three, since we put this report out with a clear and obvious recommendation to create a very similar commission to focus on schools, we continue to be criticized for not understanding the importance of schools, which we do, and I have had one person in this community volunteer to serve on the schools commission. One. And guess what? We're going to put her to work, and she's going to be phenomenal, and we need 18 other people who are willing, that have the expertise and the passion, to do exactly what this group has done for local governance and service, to talk about the schools. And it's an incredibly challenging issue on a lot of fronts. No one wants to ignore it, Juanita. We all want to see it happen. We all want to see a discussion, an honest discussion about schools. But I don't believe that we would have even gotten this conversation started, and I don't believe that we can't make progress on these issues while at the same time continuing to work on identifying the right solutions for the schools. It doesn't have to be one, you know, the two hand in hand, in my opinion.
Well, I think you've done a really great job in pulling together these issues and starting with this economic development history and tradition that we've had, where we just see that we haven't been able to do the things that we really needed to do. When you think about poverty, the problem is that our economy has not grown. So by focusing the whole consensus plan on economic development, we have an opportunity to bring resources to this community that I think would have an effect on the poverty that we have in the community. And then I think back to, you know, we've done this before. My neighborhood, Eastwood, you know, was a village. When the resources shifted and we really could recognize benefits, Eastwood became part of the city. We didn't lose our identity. We still think of ourselves as Eastwood. So do you see ways of drawing this representative distribution in a way that would preserve the identities of the communities, even though they might give up some you know, particular aspect of their governance?
Absolutely. I think, again, in the public feedback that we heard, we heard loud and clear that people do identify with their community, whether that community is a specific neighborhood in the city or whether that community is a village or a certain township. There is clearly a sense of attachment. But there's also the reality that we all live in Greater Syracuse. And that's where our economy is anchored, in Syracuse. It's the reason why we made the decisions we did on the sales tax sharing formula 8 years ago, because everyone realized, including a unanimous county legislature, that the city of Syracuse is the economic engine for the region. We don't have to give up our history to chart a better future, right? I completely and totally disagree that we would have to give up our history to chart a better future, but we do have to make different decisions going forward. And Minch, I just want to add one thing to the conversation about poverty. Poverty in our community has gotten worse over the last few years, and it is not just because we have an economy that hasn't grown at the pace of the national average. It is also because of some of the decisions that our local government structures have enabled, right? Sprawl, and the types of sprawl that have happened over the course of the last 40 years. We've doubled the amount of urbanized land while our population hasn't grown, and that has had a concentrating effect on poverty, and in particular on the minority community. And that is a result of the fact that we have 36 individual municipalities, each empowered with their power over home rule and land use and everything else. Those are products of our current structure. Those are targets of our efforts to try to make things better.
As a longtime fan of consolidation, I'd like to point out I made the resolution about 40 years ago that the village of Camillus consider dissolving itself. I got short shrift from the mayor at that time, who said, you couldn't get rid of me in the election, so this is how you're going to get rid of me now. But I do have another comment, and that is I was amazed at the short shrift given by the county legislative leader and the city mayor on your report. I thought it was a complete lack of respect on a part of the work that you have done. And I also have one question now, and that is that what is your calendar now for the rest of the whatever period of time we're talking about?
So I'll take the last part of that. First of all, thank you on the Village of Camillus. This is hard, right? So nothing about this is easy, and it is sometimes political. The calendar is we're talking to town and village and county officials, city officials right now about individual service delivery categories that they could just roll their sleeves up on. I hope that 5 or 6 of these these recommendations see action by the end of the year. Now, is that guaranteed to happen? I don't know, but one of the things that Center State CEO and Syracuse 2020 have committed to doing is to putting out an annual report card on the progress we're making on all these issues, right? Not just governance, but on all of them. 12 months from now, what have we accomplished? Have any of our leaders heeded the call and taken the blueprint and implemented some of these steps? We know that the county has already done one thing with Aqua, which is going to have a significant impact. But there's plenty more that we could do. We are encouraging, the Consensus Commission has been encouraging a referendum in 2017 on the broader issues of metropolitan government. And I will be the first to admit that there are still some details that need to be worked out. There's community conversation that needs to happen. But I reject the idea that this is something that's being pushed down people's throats or rushed for two reasons. One, we started this work 3.5 years ago. We've been 100% open and transparent. Consensus Commission meetings have been open to the public. We've had 80 public meetings. We've put out 3 reports, hundreds of pages of data. We've gotten 11,000 comments, and that's even before this latest round. There's been a lot of dialogue, maybe more dialogue on this issue, probably more dialogue on this issue even than we've had around the question of Interstate 81 over the course of the last few years. Okay? There's nothing about this that is rushed. We recommended a referendum in 2016, last year, and that was postponed and put off because people wanted more time, and we understand that. These are not issues that we should step into lightly. But we cannot ignore the fact that we are staring down the barrel of a gun. Not just the city, again, but our towns and villages, too. We're staring down the barrel of a gun. We're staring down a major economic problem that we're not performing, and we're staring down a fiscal crisis that is threatening the very forms of government that we're sitting here talking about today. And we're running out of time. And the thing that I feel most passionately about this entire effort, is that we still have a chance as residents of Greater Syracuse to make these decisions for ourselves, to chart the path forward together, taking divisive dialogue on both sides and finding common ground in the middle. And at some point in the not too distant future, we're going to lose that opportunity. And someone from outside of our community is going to come in and tell us what services to cut, what taxes to raise, what's important. How's our community going to be represented in that conversation? How's the minority community going to be represented in that conversation? We can still make these choices together, but we're running out of time, and we have to depoliticize the issues as best we can and come together and find a way to work together and put something forward that can make a meaningful impact.
Rob, thank you, Neil, for the presentation this morning. I've been in favor of municipal, the metropolitan government for 40 to 50 years and tried. I just have to tell you, let's talk about the consensus presentation made this morning. You did not mention, nor did Neil, schools once in the presentation. You did mention it. It was on your slide.
Neil did. Okay. He mentioned the creation of the commission, the desire to create the schools commission.
Okay. My memory is not that fast.
It's okay.
I think that that's very important that you give the explanation that you did to the questionnaire.
Yep.
Very early on in the presentation.
That's a good point.
The second would be, I think that that's, by the way, a lost opportunity, but if you did look to schools, you wouldn't be standing here today. It would have never happened what you have done in the last 3 years. It's very important, I think, that one of the key things is to mention again and emphasize the number of people that are going to be represented by a representative, 16,000 people. That's a key point, and I think you should hammer it across. And the last is, how do we go about getting a consensus presentation? what could, how could we all be engaged in doing that? Be the, your agent to get the consensus presentation in our communities, whatever our communities are.
So thank you. Point well taken on being more clear about the schools, because it is the issue that comes up the most. We should be more direct about it at the very front end of the conversation. I think that's a great suggestion. A member of the commission, Kathy, Kevin, myself, Neil, we probably give the most out of anyone. We'll go anywhere, anytime. We did those 80 public meetings. We probably did 150 or 200 other, you know, semi-public, semi-private briefings for stakeholders. We've gone to neighborhood associations, we've gone to businesses to provide this presentation, and we will go anywhere. All you have to do is ask. You let any one of us know, you send an email into the Consensus Commission website, and we will show up, and we will present this, and we will answer questions, and we will take the criticism, and we will try to keep a level head about it. We're committed to continuing that public dialogue. And also, I don't know, Kevin, whether or not these materials, this presentation is available on the website or whether we can make it available to TMR. That's easy to do. But we'll go anywhere, and we invite you to invite us into any group, Rotary, you name it. We have gone, and we'll continue to do it.
Rob, thanks again for the presentation. I'd like to speak to Clyde's comment about, you know, kind of the lack of support from the county ledge and the city council. And working with my Democrat and Republican colleagues, I have got to tell you that this is one of the first times that I have really felt the decision to make our own group to look at this is done because they did listen to their constituents. I have been to many, many, many of these presentations, pretty much all of them in the city and to several county ones. And all of us were hearing, both in those meetings and personally from phone calls and emails, et cetera, what our constituents wanted. One of the things that you brought up was that when you look at Democrats and Republicans, maybe when you look at representation, that it doesn't seem to be according to what the numbers show it ought to be. However, this is one of the first times in the 4 years I've been there that I can actually say every one of them listened to their constituents. So, and it's not that we all haven't been talking about this. And schools was a big thing. And I know that you keep addressing that. But until we come to a point where the people that we hear from are comfortable, and looking around the room, the people I represent do not look like you. And I need to listen to what they say, and I feel really good about the fact that my colleagues in the county are listening too.
Good morning, Rob. I have many questions, but I'll try to limit it to two. One is the school district is, going back to the school district, is a dependent school district. So the city, it's in the city's budget. So how does this consolidated new government pay for the school districts? And nowhere in this presentation, when I read the report, the city would remain a debt district. So can you explain how a debt district works?
Yeah, so I'll take the debt district, and I'll pass off the school district to Murph, who has a little bit more familiarity with it for the work that 2020 has done. The debt district is simply a product of existing state law, right? When you consolidate governments, you can't pass pre-existing debt from one district to another. The same is true. The idea of a city debt district is a product of a city-county combination. The same would be true for a town or village, that you can't take that debt incurred by one set of taxpayers historically and pass it on to the backs of others. And so it would be managed just the same way that you would manage any existing liability. We believe in the model that we put forward. You would maintain the municipality of of Syracuse in some way, shape, or form, just like you would probably maintain the boundaries of the county or maybe even in some cases town or village dissolution is a little bit of a different story under New York state law. But that debt district is simply there to be responsive to existing statutes in the state and in the Constitution that say you can't move that debt from one place to another.
It is a dependent district. So that legal obligation for the current funding formula that the city currently provides, which I think is about 18% of the city school district budget, goes to the city school district as the legal obligation of the new entity, as does the, what are you, about 16 in debt service now? 16 million, I think, in debt service will go to the debt service of the entity. City residents' taxes wouldn't change at all. You're paying all of that now. No, I'm paying it all right now.
Then you'd pay this new consolidated government tax.
No.
How would you
in the report, there's no new consolidated government tax at all. The existing revenue is the existing revenue, and the existing bills paid with that existing revenue that you pay today would most likely occur at the same rate. The idea, the optimum for consensus is, with the savings infused, there are additional resources to apply to things like the city school district.
City residents are currently paying school property taxes. That would continue under the new district. City residents are currently paying for existing city debt. That would continue under the new district. City residents are currently paying the city and the county for service delivery. And going forward, the city would pay the metropolitan government for service delivery. And presumably, there would be a lower cost to that service delivery under the metropolitan government, given the savings that we've identified, than there would be under the current city property tax formula. So effectively, your debt, your school districts would continue to be paid for just like they are today. And there is the possibility of significant property tax relief for residents in the city as well as those who live outside of the city.
Thank you so much, Kathy and Rob, for coming today, and we thank Neil as well.